Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm your host Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
So back to the full compliment after your absence last week, Christie, but we'll let you off with that one. Before we get into the action this week that just happened this weekend, it's worth noting that we are one game missing after Kilmarnock Motherwell, that was supposed to be on Friday night, was postponed due to the Killie players. Was it six in the end that were tested positive for COVID?
I think
that's obviously resulted in them having to forfeit this week's Betfred Cup game against Falkirk, with Falkirk giving a 3-0 win. We're not really going to get into the in-depth on that or anything. It's just kind of a situation we don't really want to get ourselves stuck in. So what we will get stuck into is the games that did go ahead, starting with those that were played on Friday night. And the game at Tannadice, where Livingston beat Dundee United by 2-1. Nicky Clark opening the scoring for Dundee United before Guthrie and Forrest scored for Livingston to give the Wayside all 3 points. Is there cause for concern for Mickey Mellon and Dundee United?
I think offensively, and we've said it against Shetland back, but here, but offensively, and we'll say defensively as well, the goalie scoring is the only shot they have the whole game. And that is a worry. The only shot you've got is a free kick. That, to be fair, Nicky Clark with a good finish, but that's a huge worry. And then you look at the way that they're thrown away at the end, and an absolute disaster class of defending to lose the game. You probably do begin to worry a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree that it's starting to get a little bit more worrying in terms of the performances have dropped off a little bit since the start of the season, but I do think some of the calls for, I mean, I think there's a little bit more frustration about Mickey Mellon from United fans, and I kind of think that's a little bit premature. Keeping in mind that we all here, especially, we tipped Dundee United to struggle more so than they have done in the totality of the season so far. So I think it's a little bit early. There definitely needs to be improvements. Like you said, Christy, I think they still, despite Shankland coming back, look fairly blunt up top, but yeah, I think he deserves a little bit more time.
Yeah, I think the sort of if there was calls for him to be sacked or whatever, it's a bit premature.
Well premature. I think you definitely need to look through till January before you start calling for that. I mean, especially for a new manager, I can understand. For instance, a team will move on to at some point in Hamilton, if you're calling for that, because Brian Rice has been there longer than that. You've got Mickey Mellon, who he is new to the game up here, new Dundee United manager. You've got to give him a little bit more time than that, but he does need to look to change things a little bit, because it's just not necessarily working. And I think obviously you can't do much for defensive calamities like with the goal, but going forward, there is some real worries for me.
Yeah, and the other thing I was going to say, I mean, it's not like there's been a huge squad overhaul. Obviously, Dundee United are working within limitations like everyone else. So, yeah, there's only a certain extent you can go to with the criticism of Mellon, I feel. And yeah, I think maybe he needs to switch up the shape a little bit, maybe. Get Luke Bolton involved further up the pitch would be one thing I would say, because he's been a consistent bright spark for them this season, and especially in forward areas. So that's one thing I would look at. But you have to look at the players he's working with.
I don't understand the decision that Luke Bolton in this game played as an orthodox right-back. I mean, we've seen clearly from, I think it was the game against Rangers, where he was stripped regularly defensively. What part of that makes you think that he'll then go in and play as an orthodox right fullback in a 4-4-2, 4-3-3, whatever? It's that really, really baffled me.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that you made there, Haz. It's still largely the core of Robbie Nielsen's Dundee United team that Mellon's had to work with. So I'm not sure whether this season they should just look at it, conserve their place in the league, and then sort of let's see where we go from there. Another side that will probably be looking at the Betfred Cup groups to sort of get a couple of wins under their belt. But for Livingston, that's a couple of wins on the spin for them now. This will jump them up to sixth in the league. That's just kind of the nature of the way the league table's looking at the minute. But after they conceded, they pretty much dominated the game. I was pretty impressed with some of the stuff that Livingston played, albeit, as we said, some rubbish defending from Dundee United. But hey, Marvin Bartley out wide, doing the business again. I'm pretty sure you would have enjoyed that one, Haz.
Just delighted that he's having the Renaissance 2.0. Although, yeah, very much helped by some lacklustre defending there. And initially, Dundee United do decently to block the first cross, and I think it's actually Shankland that does that. But when the ball comes back in, static, nobody's out to Bartley quick enough. He completely telegraphs where he's going to cross the ball. And it's just mind-boggling what Connolly does in terms of his body position as he comes out to meet him, just lets the cross go past him, and then I think it's Edwards at the front post, not decisive enough to come out and sort of stamp his authority on the situation and cut it out. But yeah, an easy goal. But yeah, like you said, I think Livingston throughout the game endeavoured very well and certainly deserved the 3 points.
Yeah, I really like this. You've obviously pointed Bartley. I actually really like the header from Serrano to Bartley. It's very easy just to sort of chuck that back in there, but he's put a little bit of direction on to realise that there's a spare man, and it's one of those ones I really like when it's a sort of a flowing finish that he's managed to run onto and guide it across the goalkeeper. But yeah, hugely disappointing from a Dundee United perspective that it's basically two players totally unmarked that's combined to score the goal.
Yeah, and then if you thought that sort of goal was bad, then later on, the last minute, isn't it, that Forrest pops up with the winner. But I mean, if you could sort of, if there was a book of sort of mistakes and stuff like that, and this is just a catalogue of errors. There we go. It's the cliche. That's the book I'm looking for.
That's it.
Book that exists. Anyway, this would be the definition of that. Okay, I mean, Connolly's had a shocker all game. Callum Butcher. I don't know what he's thinking. But just taking a swipe at the ball like that is just garbage stuff. But I mean, once we sort of get through all these mistakes defensively from Dundee United, fair play to Poplatnik, who puts on a plate for Forrest. That was pretty composed of him to pick out the pass instead. I mean, as a striker, you'd have assumed he was just gonna, and a striker that's not scored yet, I don't think, for Livingston, would have just taken a swipe at that and try to take the glory for himself. But yeah, pretty decent play from him to set that goal up.
Yeah, I think as well he's probably recognised that Livingston don't really have an outright first choice striker, so he's going to get himself in the team if he contributes to winning moments like that. So yeah, really nice unselfish play from him. But yeah, it is good decisive passing from them in that final moment. But yeah, it's more so down to dreadful defensive decisions. And again, this is where I don't feel like that's a coaching issue, because there's two very basic errors that occur there. Like you said, Butcher just swipes at the ball. He's just got to be calm there and control it. After that, though, Connolly has a chance, in my opinion, to play the ball back to his keeper, but instead takes a touch infield and just gives it away so cheaply. And it's mind-boggling stuff. But yeah, fair play to Livingston. I think they've bounced back really well. It's starting to have the makings of a decent side again. after a little bit of a rework.
They've definitely improved at the back door. We noticed that in the early games where they were just shipping goals for fun. That's something they've really, really tightened up. Obviously, the clean sheet last week and only one shot this week. But yeah, this goal's polar opposites from both teams. Dundee United very rash in their decision making and so much composure from Livingston. I actually do think that, I mean, fair play to, obviously, to Plotnick for that, but the goalkeeper's actually given him a massive amount of space to just bend around him in the front post. So as from a striker's perspective, obviously not without a goal, you're surprised that he doesn't go for it, because if he goes for it, he probably scores. But fair play for noticing Forrest across there, I think just about onside. Yeah, definitely a deserved victory for Livingston. And I quite like, you see David Martindale at the end, he's sort of celebrating to sort of what would have been the fans, but then you're like, well, nobody's there, who are you celebrating to? But no, a deserved win for Livingston.
Yeah, I did see that and enjoyed it. I also enjoyed Gary Holt getting a yellow card, which is always nice to see a manager.
What was that for?
I don't know. I mean,
the highlights just jumped to it and it didn't actually... I can't remember, because I mean, I watch Sports Scene, I'm just watching the YouTube ones just now. I can't actually remember what happened before it for him to get booked.
I'm assuming he got a bit rowdy celebrating the equaliser, but just to finish off with something I noticed on Twitter, I think it was, that's Alan Forrest with more fantasy football points than his brother James now, and he's got him. I picked him this weekend, or this week.
I brought him in specifically for this week, and I also brought him Kevin Nisbet, so I've had an absolute blinder.
Yeah.
I brought in Nisbet. I had Forrest the first couple of weeks, but he was kind of in and out of the team at the time, hadn't quite hit the ground running, so I took him out, but he's one to consider putting back in, because I think he's relatively cheap.
Turned out to be a pretty decent signing. But we'll move on to one of the other Friday night games at Easter Road. It was Hibs 3, Hamilton 2. Nisbet, as you mentioned there, has getting two goals. Hanlon was the third for Hibs before a late fight back from Aki's with a Callanan penalty. And yeah, Christy, Ryan Porteous' own goal. We can get to that in a bit.
Andy gives away the penalty. We'll just throw that one in there as well.
He does, yeah.
Christy rubbing his hands together here. He's loving it.
When I saw it, it was basically the, obviously, from your personal point of view, Aberdeen late winner and Porteous making a bit of an arse of it. It was the Carl Carlson chef kiss for gif. It was very much in my mind.
I'll go to you first here, Haz, because this is referring to your mate, Brian Rice. He said after the game, first half, we were sitting off Hibs, making it too easy for them. I mean, is it not his decision to set his team up like that?
just don't understand some of Brian Rice's post-match comments. It's like... it's one of those where it's a complete oversimplification of football, where it's just surface level analysis. But surely that has, and to be fair to them, they are obviously limited on the night. I believe, did they only have four on the bench? Is that right?
Smitten had that. I don't know if Hamilton did.
I'll quickly try and get that for you.
Maybe I'm wrong about that, but yeah, I mean, they're limited regardless. I mean, the team they had out wasn't great anyway, but yeah, sometimes his analysis of his own team kind of leaves out the part that he is managing it. So yeah, that was odd, but yeah, again, some really poor defending. A pattern that I had noticed from their last game against Dundee United, where we're actually a little bit more full of praise for Hamilton, but the left side of that defence is completely uncomfortable with the roles. Munro and McMahon, just so uncomfortable out on that side. Don't look like they fit in there. And Dolphin, again, box office. he is wonderful to have in this league. Because initially, the first highlight you see of him, he does actually quite well, cuts out a dangerous-looking Hibs attack, and then he passes it straight off of Joe Newell.
Yeah, I mean, this when you take away the no, just to answer your question there, I think they did have a full complement of subs, so I think it must have been St Mirren that had the four. But when you take away a Dolphins goal scoring ability that he's somehow come up with this season, and you're left with the defensive side, then you realise that you've not got a very good player on your hands. But I thought Hibs absolutely battered Hamilton here. That 3-2 is probably the most like unfair scoreline on how this game went. I mean, you're actually looking at those two goals towards the end, about a sort of final 15 minute or so, just sort of lapse in concentration from Hibs, but they should have scored way more than three. Nisbet probably should have scored a hat-trick. He has a decent chance in the second half. Is it Gourlay? Is that the new goalie for Accies?
Yeah,
yeah,
Gourlay.
Because they...
I think Fulton was injured, was he?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what you thought, but I thought that Hibs just absolutely battered Hamilton here. I thought Hamilton were, again, crap defensively.
Oh, rubbish. I think Harry mentioned it already. Down that Hamilton left, Hibs right. The amount of space they afforded Martin Boyle there was ridiculous, and they should have been punished a lot more for it, for sure. It just I don't get, like I said, there's no pressure on the ball, so why are you sort of playing so narrow and giving one of the own form and one of the best wingers in the league basically the freedom of half the pitch? It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
That's just, I guess, what we're used to now from Brian Rice, isn't it? I mean, if there was one thing if you were a team that's pitching up at Easter, you're probably looking for a point. If you can try and nullify Boyle, that you're, I mean, on your way to trying to stop in Hibs, and they just opened up for him. Just mind-boggling defensive setup from Hamilton.
Yeah, and there was a lot of needless fouls, and especially for the first goal, which is a great free kick from Nisbet. But what I love about the highlight as well is it just sort of jumps in. A Dolphin is miles out of position, and it boils in behind him, and then he just brings him down. And yeah, that seemed to be a pattern. They did seem to be at least attempting tactical fouls, except from they were right on the edge of their own box. Just put them under pressure every single time.
Why does a Dolphin not just let Hamilton come across, and a Dolphin takes in the central position instead of giving away the free kick? Hamilton's close enough that he can come across and keep Boyle out wide, and a Dolphin can pick up the role in the middle. It just, there's no need to give that free kick away whatsoever.
Right, Christy.
And he's totally the wrong side anyway, so I just don't get it.
I've left it long enough for you. I'll let you have your say about Ryan Porteous's performance now.
Well, it was totally fine until about 15 minutes to go. To be honest, we didn't really do much wrong until then. But I would say the own goal's a tad unfortunate, but the penalty is really quite poor to give that away. It just leaves the leg out. Just you're 3-0 up. Just let them come inside. Gogic and I think it's McGinn are both coming back. Hallberg's taking up a position in the centre as well. You can probably allow him to go and beat you and come inside. But it's just really, really, really poor. And Smith's not done a great deal to sort of deceive him. He's not done step over or a little drop of the shoulder. He's just cut inside, really. Been taken out, but it's almost as if I've not done anything kind of stupid this season, because on the whole, he's been fairly good. It's like, oh well, I better go and do something. And then the own goal.
I think what's poor from him there is he takes a couple of steps forward before the ball's crossed, and he doesn't really need to, and that sort of couple of steps means that when the ball's crossed, when he jumps, he's going to be underneath it. And that's just, if he kind of stayed where he originally was before the ball was crossed, he'd be able to get a decent connection on the header and it'd be cleared. That's where I thought he went wrong there. But I was actually give a wee bit credit to Callum Smith for Hamilton. Actually, a forward player for them, looking to do something for once, other than leaving everything down to Templeton and Ogunpo, like running into someone, seems like his only asset at the minute. But yeah, fair play to him.
He also took an absolutely rubbish penalty as well. His running up for it is so telegraphed as to where he's going. I mean, if you're going to do that, you've got to stick it right in the corner. And it's so obvious that he's going to be going to the keeper's left. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the technique and everything behind it is like the technique of a 10-year-old who hasn't quite grasped how to play football yet. It's that bad.
Can I ask as well? I don't mean to be too rude about him or anything, but has he always been that big?
Who, Ogunpo?
Yeah. He's quite a big fella.
Are you meaning like sort of size or in the sort of
actual size? Yeah, not height.
Height. No.
In height, you're meaning, or sorry.
No, not
that
height.
Oh right, okay.
He's
a bit confused there. He's on Messi's growth drugs or whatever.
He seems pretty stocky these days. Yeah.
He looks a little bit cumbersome and a little bit wider, I'd say, than he did last season.
I thought you were hinting that he was on the Vince McMahon early 2000s juice.
No, that's we didn't mean physically, but even then, I mean, you look at the other goals that Hamilton give away. I mean, you know, Dolphins beaten in the air by Nisbet, should give away a penalty. Went up against Newell, and this is all in the first half. I mean, I remember watching it must be Saturday morning, I sent in the message and just watched the highlights all in the first half. A Dolphin gives away the free kick stupidly for the first goal, gets beaten there for the second, and should give away a penalty as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look at the Hibs, the third goal for Hanlon, you know, it's just we mentioned earlier about Dundee United having been sort of static defensively, but I mean both Hanlon and Portis have beaten the Hamilton defence to the second the ball in from the free kick. I mean, it's madness how static they are and how they've allowed them to get wrong side of them. It's ridiculous, and it gives the goalkeeper no real chance at coming out to claim it. It's just, I mean, defensively they're a shambles, and going forward they don't create almost anything. I mean, do we classify the Portis own goal as the first one that scores from open play this year?
It's hard to say that. I mean, they haven't scored it for a starter. Like you said, Christy, it is quite unfortunate from Portis overall, I would have to say, because in my opinion, he has to put something on it. But yeah, I think that would be a little bit, gracious to give them that.
Yeah, a decent performance from Hibs, but that sort of last 15 minutes is just a wee reminder they need to keep the head screwed on in latter stages of games. We'll move on to the final Friday night game though, that took place at Pittodrie. Aberdeen came from a goal down to beat St Mirren by 2-1. Erahon with an absolute screamer opening the scoring for St Mirren before Watkins and Ferguson get the goals for Aberdeen. Starting with St Mirren here, another defeat, 6 on the spin, but is there many positives they can take from a defeat?
It's hard to say many positives, but I think if you look at the entirety of the game, they didn't concede too many clear-cut chances, I guess, is one positive you could have. Also, I thought, particularly in the first half, they at least attempted to engage Aberdeen a little bit higher up the pitch than they have for previous games and opponents. which is credit to them, because it's not easy to do that. Yeah, so I thought that was a positive for St. Mirren, but also later on in the game they did show a little bit more attacking intent. Obviously, the goal they get is an absolute wonder strike, going to be surely up there for a goal of the season come the end of it. And yeah, I think maybe a little bit unfortunate in the sense that both the goals they concede are from outside the box. But obviously, it's a difficult away game. But some positives, perhaps. Obviously, they need points desperately, though.
I actually thought that on the basis of the first sort of 15 minutes, it looked like it was going to be a battering, but they managed to get a foothold of the game, and I think a lot of that came through Erehon and McPherson in midfield. I thought that they, between sort of 15 minutes and 60 minutes in the game, so I thought they had a good 45-minute spell where they really sort of bossed McRory and Ferguson, and they'll be one of only a few to sort of do that this year. They didn't create too much themselves, but they largely kept Aberdeen at bay to that kind of shots from distance. Unfortunately, obviously, that's the two that they concede from. But I think it's one where they probably came up not expecting too much, especially given the run of form. But it's probably a performance you can take a little bit of confidence from. They've gone up to what will be probably a top four team by the end of the season, and they have held their own, and probably unlucky not to come away with a point from the game.
Yeah, I think this could be one game. I mean, there's another later in the weekend that we'll get to where the sort of depth in the squad was really highlighted. I mean, you mentioned there about St Mirren rather only having four substitutes. Aberdeen were able to rely on their bench to, well, in my opinion, anyway, the subs changed the game in Aberdeen's favour. Yeah, so not one substitution was made at all for St Mirren, which I guess you can't really sort of put any criticism towards. It was just guys that were almost making up the numbers. But yeah, I mean, might as well to just touch on the Erehon goal, or his name's a right tricky one for to pronounce. Erehon, is that it?
Yes, Ethan Erehon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just an unbelievable goal. It was one of them when I was watching it, and it hits the back of the net, and you're just like, Jesus, what just happened there? But yeah, I don't think you can sort of put a load of criticism on how Aberdeen defended the goal. It's like almost one of those goals where you've just got to hold your hands up and write, okay, we're on the end of an absolute screamer. We've just got to take our medicine, as they say.
Yeah, and as well, it's come from a throw-in which has a fairly unusual technique. It's just launched in fairly flat. I think maybe Aberdeen weren't set for that or expecting it, and yeah, catches them off guard. Decent from McPherson to just hold up play and then lay it off to Erehon. I don't know. It's a weird pronunciation, but yeah, stunning strike. And there's something, I mean, obviously not satisfying from the perspective of an Aberdeen supporter, but to watch a keeper just completely rooted to the spot.
Yeah. Top class goal.
It's the way the ball kind of moves, because it kind of looks like Holman might get a wee block on it, and it just starts peeling away from him just as it gets to him. And I mean, what a strike. I think the guy from Brian Bovril joked about that he'll end up finishing third behind an Edward Tappin and a deflected Morelos goal for a goal of the month, which
he probably will. But yeah, obviously Aberdeen came out with the win, and as I mentioned just a minute or two ago, I thought the changes that Derek McInnes made really turned the game in Aberdeen's favour, which is a bit of a surprise because he's not known for his use of his substitutes. I thought that McLennan and Edmondson coming on for Wright and McGinn were the changes that really helped. I thought Neil McGinn had an absolute stinker. Looked every part of a 33-year-old winger in that game. Just bit, maybe a wee bit of a worry for his future Aberdeen. Don't know if I'm just getting too hung up on one game, but yeah.
He's only got a year. He's only got the rest of this year. I think he'll see it this year and he'll be off probably.
Yeah, you would imagine so. But as well as the changes, I thought what was to me an obvious thing to do to get yourself back in the game was just push Ryan Hedges further up the pitch, and they did that. And I mean, he played a massive part in the equaliser. And again, just probably Aberdeen's most influential creative player at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that reviewing the Ross County game from last week, Rory. It is kind of bizarre when you see him positioned so deep for Aberdeen, because we know how effective he can be. And surely McInnes does at this point, because he's relied on him a lot in the early part of the season. But yeah, that was an obvious adjustment that needed to be made. But I suppose that does also, again, go back to what St Mirren did on the front foot to sort of pin him back in the wing-back position a little bit more. Forced Aberdeen to go down the channels a lot, especially early in the game. But yeah, good adjustment from McInnes, and obviously they get the rewards. And Watkins, obviously, to take a snapshot like that shows a lot of confidence. So he's obviously gained a fair amount from that goal last week.
Mm.
It's the perfect finish, really. Quick touch at the feet, use the other one, bottom corner across the goalkeeper, and it's exactly what you're looking for your striker. And it's one of those times when he actually picked up the right positions. What my only criticism of him at times has been that he sort of drifted wide, and then you're looking for someone in the box for the cross, and he's just not there. But having some of these guys playing closer to him, it sort of allowed him to take up more central positions. Even sort of Edmondson was doing a little bit of drifting out wide, and that's where the second goal comes from as well.
Yeah, I thought when Edmondson came on, and I've seen some stuff online about Aberdeen should play with two up front again, and just sort of, I mean, this is mainly off a specific Facebook group, some absolute wall punchers telling you that 4-4-2 is the only way to go. But I think when Edmondson did come on, he occupied some spaces, and even defenders for St Mirren that previously were either sort of weren't occupied, I guess, which helped especially for the Watkins goal, I thought. But in terms of this Ferguson winner, you're absolutely kicking yourself if you're St Mirren there, because that goes through a good couple of bodies, and I don't think I wouldn't be putting too much blame on Jack Anik in goal, but there's not an awful lot of power on the shot, a lot of good accuracy, but I guess it's just almost a bit of a sort of tired attempt of blocking that sort of late shot.
The ones that go through the legs, it's so difficult to get the reaction to. There's every chance that hits off a Shaughnessy and goes across the left corner, so it's difficult to sort of to make the dive early. But it's pretty well directed, and it's definitely a welcome goal from an Aberdeen point of view.
Yeah, I was going to say I think Anik had a decent game throughout, so it is a little bit unfortunate, and yeah, agree with Christy. I think he's maybe expecting a touch or a proper block from Shaughnessy before he commits fully to the dive, so unfortunate from his point of view and St Mirren as a whole. But yeah, Aberdeen continuing a really good run of form.
Yeah, I guess that's the typical sort of McInnes in Aberdeen, not an awfully great performance, but grinding out the wins. Same can't be said about St Mirren. They're obviously in League Cup action this week against Partick Thistle. So, I mean, it's not the easiest of ties, but I guess it'll just be back to the drawing board. I think it's Motherwell they've got once they come back to league action. But we'll move on to the Sunday games now. And we'll start at McDermott Park, where Celtic were bailed out with two late goals coming from Griffiths and Klamala to earn them the 3 points. It feels like, I mean, I guess you can say for both Celtic and Rangers that we're almost saying the same things every week now. I don't think Celtic were particularly good here. One game where the sort of five substitute rule really took its, or you saw the benefits rather of having those all that options and those options off the bench. But yeah, I don't know if either of you guys thought that it was another poor performance from Celtic, or did they look any better than recently?
They were poor for my book, and there again, it's a couple of get out of jail games already this season. I think the Dundee United at Tannadice, the game in Latvia in the Europa League. I think they were pretty poor in the last Europa League, the qualifier. I was just last Thursday, and this one again is a huge get out of jail. But at the same time, that's why Celtic have won so much over the years, is because they, even when they are poor, they can still come up with the big moments to win games. But when you're already relying on doing that about 3-4 times in the space of a month, or the space of 6 weeks, it does begin to be a worry.
And the other worry is that they probably gave up the best chance of the game up until the 90 minutes were up, because Conway's chance is an absolute, well, it's not a sitter in the sense that it's kind of come fairly wide by the time he makes contact with it, but that's a huge chance for a team that don't score many goals. But I just thought throughout that tactically there was an issue for Celtic, where Frimpong was constantly receiving the ball on the right hand side, but nobody in the Celtic midfield was coming over to create the overloads that they've sort of relied upon throughout the early part of the season in the wide areas, because Ncham was in there and he preferred to sort of stay inside, and El Hamid wasn't committing to sort of overlapping, which eventually is how they get their goal, by the way. But yeah, I thought that was an odd tactical decision, that nobody really committed to that.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of watching the game off of the SBFL YouTube channel, highlights can't always tell the full story of games, but I mean, from what they put together, a lot of the big chances for Celtic were coming from set pieces. And I mean, the obvious comparison to Celtic is going to be how Rangers are playing, and you never really see Celtic scoring like really decent goals at the minute, I don't think. I mean, you can get the odds of a decent finish here and there, but I just don't think Celtic are a particularly well functioning team at the minute. As you made the point before we start recording, Christy, it's they're winning games because they've got better players than the opposition, and I think that's the pure case at the minute.
You're going a bit struggling to create things, even from the Ross County game a couple of weeks ago. They won 5-0. 3 or 4 of those goals are from set pieces. They are really seeming to struggle to sort of create chances for themselves at the minute. And part of the reason that they get their goals, because for a kind of strange reason, St Johnstone came out a lot of men forward for a set piece right at the end of the game. I know obviously you're looking to get the win and get a goal, because you've only scored one in your last 7 games. But surely a 0-0 against what is obviously a very, very good team is a positive result, and something that you can look and build and take confidence from.
No, yeah, exactly. I agree totally. I mean, they, like I said, created one particularly good chance, so they could could have sort of hung their hat on that and, you know, limited Celtic for large spells of the game. So yeah, it would have been a very good result to take a point away. But yeah, I mean, they'll be kicking themselves because it's just such a basic goal to be given up to even a guy who obviously hasn't been playing much football. But if you give him that much space in the box, it's always going to result in a goal.
Mm. Were St Johnstone any better this week, or are we still? I know you're a wee bit worried for them. I thought they played a wee bit better, but I guess you're still looking at that that goal scored column, and it's some worrying numbers.
It's hard to say though, because ultimately, again, Celtic, the one thing they do very well is obviously retain possession. So the limited amount of time that St Johnstone did actually have the ball, there were maybe a couple of signs of improvement. I think maybe they were a little bit more urgent when they did have possession, but it's hard to say. And ultimately, in the end, like I said, they did create that one chance, but aside from that, not very much.
Yeah, one of the guys that came on and made a big impact was obviously Lee Griffiths. He, as I mentioned, he got the opening or the first goal. Were either you impressed by Griffiths? Was he the game changer that he seemed to be made out to be, or was it one sort of moment?
Well, I didn't. Unfortunately, I went out before the second half started, so I didn't see the full second half. But just judging from the highlights, he got himself in the right positions for a couple of chances. His overhead kick's a bit rash, but he is a header that he kind of makes a little bit of a mess of. Well, I think he takes a bit of a deflection and goes over from a Christie cross. So he was picking up the right positions, which is encouraging. And I'm being a bit hopeful and maybe a bit carried away, but kind of hoping for some shit squad player to get a little injury and just Steve Clark to get him on the phone.
Yeah, I think Michael Stewart was banging that drum on Sports Scene last night. Just for the Griffiths' goal, though, I mean, when I was watching the highlight, I have absolutely no idea what Murray Davidson's doing here. He's actually touch tight with Griffiths at the edge of the box for a one moment, and then he just leaves him. I mean, when Griffiths gets his head to the ball, in what, like the pen spot almost, Murray Davidson's just like, he's so far away from him for being the closest man to him when the move started. It's just, I mean, if that's the sort of stuff, I don't think you can put a large amount of blame down on Callum Davidson. It's just real poor decision making from your players.
I did think, however, sorry, Christy, but I did think that maybe one of the three that are kind of standing on that 6-yard line, particularly Kerr, should probably read that a little bit better and get out quicker to at least put some pressure on him. But yeah, you're totally right about Davidson just totally leaves him. And yeah, that's the fine margins of staying alive and alert right to the end of the game. And obviously they end up losing 2-0 and it looks even worse on them. But yeah, that's a harsh lesson on Callum Davidson and St Johnstone.
I think it's Gordon. You notice when Aya just puts out the ball to Al Ahmed, he has a little look around, he sees Griffiths, he points at Griffiths, but nobody ever picks him up. And you're kind of like, well, if you've spotted him there, why either of you maybe not going to pick him up, or why somebody else not going out to pick Griffiths up? But yeah, there's not only Davidson to blame there, it's, I think, O'Halloran just lets him run. As well, he just—it's not even his basic movement. He just takes two steps back the way. He's gets the wrong sides of them both. Gets in the right position for the cross, and it's a great header. But I mean, as you said as well, Rory, this was just a game of the fact that the Celtic have a bigger squad and better players. They can bring on Brian Christie, Lee Griffiths, Klamala, Tom Rogic, Scott Brown, you're able to bring on all those five players, and you know, two of them ultimately make the difference.
Mm. Yeah, so it was an important win early in the day for Celtic. Rangers would play later on, which we'll move on to now. They won 2-0 against Ross County. Tavernier with a penalty to open the scoring, and Brandon Barker finishing it off late on. An improved performance, I would say, from Ross County compared to last weekend, but I guess it couldn't really get much worse than they were against Aberdeen. But that's still one win, and again, only one goal as well in their last five. Would you say this was either of you their improved performance, or am I just being a wee bit too positive on Ross County?
A little bit too positive, I'd say. I think this is one where they were bound just to sit in and frustrate. And when you give away a penalty and concede the goal that early on, then it's kind of your game plan's then out the window. I mean, I think that the only thing Rangers will be sort of more complaining about here is the fact that they've not scored more than two, because this just fits in. We said this before. This just fits in with every Rangers game this season. They get a fairly early breakthrough, and then it's almost game over, and they're just toying with the opposition from then till the end of the game. And without the opposition, with the exception of the odd set piece, never really looking like scoring.
I thought, I think it definitely was improved, but there's only so far that can go. And also, you have to take into account, I personally felt that Rangers were a little bit flat in this game. You know, obviously, having played a very big game for themselves in midweek, and obviously credit to them for going through against Galatasaray. But I thought that Rangers were a little bit flat, didn't move the ball as crisply or quickly as they have been. Obviously, a little bit of rotation in there. You need to take that into account. But I just thought that, obviously, like you said, Chris, it's a bit of a, well, I think it's a really poor decision from Donaldson, because I don't think Morales is going to get to that ball from Tavernier, personally, for the penalty. And then, obviously, Donaldson has a huge chance from a set piece later in the game. So credit to Ross County for keeping themselves in the game for as long as they did. I think Rangers were a little bit flat and ultimately had the quality to bring in off the bench to kind of seal the victory. But yeah, ultimately, again, similar to St. Johnstone, no points, and it adds to their worries.
Yeah. As you said, Christy, it's just falling into sort of pattern now of Rangers at home. It's very comfortable. I think for the penalty, I was actually going to give a wee bit of credit to Morelos, because the run he makes, you can almost tell where Donaldson's running to. And yeah, it's just really clumsy from him, and Morelos, I thought, bought it pretty well. But yeah, I wouldn't say there's an awful lot to say. I agree with you there as well. I thought Rangers were pretty flat. It's not the sort of performance we were used to seeing. But I guess after Thursday night, if you were probably looking at one fixture that all their focus would be on for this week, it probably would have been the Galatasaray game, with Europe sort of being so financially attractive. But I guess all focus now for Rangers, as Celtic as well, I guess, is the Old Firm game that's coming up at the once we get back from the international break. Just quickly before we finish off on the football that happened this weekend, I'm going to ask both of you for a prediction. I'll go with you first, Haz. Who's coming out on top in the Old Firm game?
It's hard.
I don't need a score. I just need a one-word answer of.
I'm gonna go for Rangers. I think that they're gonna make a statement early in the season that this is gonna go to the wire this year.
Ooh. At Parkhead as well.
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, Harry there as well. Rangers.
Ooh. To be fair, I think I might, I'd actually make it a hat trick there, a full house. I fancy Rangers in that
which
game.
Which means Celtic are going to win.
Yeah, automatically is what happens. But just to round off, it's obviously, as we're recording, coming to the end of deadline day, a couple of transfers have gone through, so I'll just ask you both your thoughts on them. Chrissy, I'll go with you first. Aberdeen bringing in Greg Lee on a free transfer. A quick thoughts on that one?
Makes sense.
I thought Greg Lee was good when he played last year. He offers an option as either the left central defender in a back three or the wing back, or he can play as a left back in a back four. I think it's a position that Aberdeen kind of lack cover in. You look at the left sided role of the back three, there's only Considine there, and there's probably no aid for the wing back. So on paper it makes a lot of sense. It's only at the moment till January, and we've also got to remember that had it not been for COVID and things like that, Greg Lee likely would have been an Aberdeen player by now anyway. So I think it's a good move, and hopefully things go well, and hopefully he can have his deal extended along with Tommy Hogan.
Hazel, got you next. Kyle McGuinness at Hibs.
Yeah, I've been a fan of McGuinness for a long time, and I think obviously for Hibs a 5-year deal is great business for a young player like that. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in amongst, obviously no disrespect to St Mirren, but a better group of players, and I think that the system they're playing will give him a little bit more freedom to really contribute in an attacking sense, sort of improve his numbers. So yeah, I've got a keen eye on that one.
Christy, back to you. Diego Laxat, he looks like he's going to join Celtic on loan from AC Milan.
I would say on paper that I have not seen too much of Laxalt recently. I know he's not been playing too much for AC Milan, but on paper that seems a good deal. Celtic, again, like we just said, they're already they need a bit more coverage on that left side. They've only really got Greg Taylor at the minute, so to get someone in on loan, someone who's got a good ability for a brief sort of, there's almost like a stopgap till you make your big move probably next summer for a new left-sided defender. It makes a lot of sense. Comes in with a good pedigree. Should like I said on paper be a good signing.
Has St Johnstone have signed striker Guy Melamed? There's a striker there. I mean, we're not going to say we know too much about this fella, but surely a striker was on the top of the shopping list.
Yeah, well, I, like you said, don't know anything about the guy on paper, but yeah, it comes from the Israeli Premier League from a side I've never heard of, so it could go either way. I think, you know, they definitely did need a striker. Hopefully he kind of fits the bill a little bit better than the current options, Hendry and May. Remains to be seen, but notice that he has to isolate for 14 days, so probably unlikely to be involved in the first game back, but yeah, it's a hard one to comment on, but it'll be interesting to see how much involvement he actually has, whether they'll throw him in as soon as they can or sort of play the slow game with him.
He does have an Israeli Premier League title to his name at least, so you're signing a league winner at one point. It was as a squad player for Hapoel Beersheva, but still relatively decent goal. Kind of it seems like, I don't know if there's just stats, I'm just looking at this just on Wikipedia, but 17 goals from 60 games, it's not great, but it's not awful either.
One more each. Christy, Dundee United have signed Mark McNulty on a loan from Reading.
Again, this one on paper makes sense and it looks good, but we alluded to there's no point signing a guy who you want to score goals, you're not going to create the chances for him. Dundee United need some creators, so if you can get him in a decent position, then he will score goals for you. But at the same time, if you're playing like you are on Friday, then you're really not going to get the best out of McNulty whatsoever.
And to finish it off, I'll give you this one. Has Birmingham offside midfielder Charlie Larkin, but Stuart Kettlewell. Did I say Birmingham signed Ross County?
Yeah.
Wrong way round. But Stuart Kettlewell said he's not guaranteed game time, so that's exactly what you hear. What you want to hear from your new manager. But yeah, midfielder, another midfield option. Is that what they were needing?
Well, when we covered County last week, I was heavily critical of the midfield there. He's described here as a box-to-box midfield. Kind of fulfill that sort of role for them, and if he can provide a little bit more defensive steel for games against the bigger sides in the league, like we saw against Aberdeen, then it's a decent signing. But it'll be interesting again to see how much game time he actually gets.
So we'll just kind of run things off there. We obviously got the Scotland game coming up this week. I got my dates right this week after the mix up I had last week on the pod. I'm pretty sure I said it was tonight. That shows how far wrong I was. But hopefully we can get a result there. But we'll be back to sort of look over that Scotland game next week. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.